Okay, so I'm gonna start round two of this recording for family office. And where I had left off at the end was trying to figure out what services are available, which services are better to have in-house or outsourced. So before I go into the next part of this, the key things that are going to determine whether you the make or buy decision is going to come up because of cost and budget, expertise, regulatory restrictions, technology and infrastructure, complexity, and the data confidentiality. Now, what are those three areas actually go in, or six areas actually really delve into? So cost and budget, when you're a small family office, escalating costs can be a really serious challenge to a family office. Part of the reason why you want to do the multiple family office is to reduce some of that serious escalating costs as you get bigger and bigger. So it gets kind of unreasonable to insource a whole range of potential services, family office services, without considering the economic benefits of this, because you can only spread yourself a certain amount, and after that you're not helping yourself, you're hurting yourself. So you want to appoint an outside provider, and sometime by appointing this outside provider, this kind of ensures a type of quality, possible cost savings. It could go either way, because the family office would benefit for the economics of scale, and the family office management, the multiple, the MFO, benefits from economic of scale by having these services across multiple families. Expertise. So a priority service is something that is defined by the family may not be covered in-house, and because your personal knowledge or your personal skill or personal expertise is the key to success in the family. Areas that you do not have expertise in, your family office is going to gain, if you outsource certain selected services, those are going to require specific expertise. For instance, if your family office revolves around hemp or cannabis, and you don't have anybody in your family office that knows how to grow, you got serious problems, okay? If you don't have anybody in your family office with expertise in the very thing that your family is structured upon, you're going to have problems, okay? So you want to either have somebody in-house that has that expertise, and if not, you'll gain by outsourcing that. Regulatory restrictions. Now, I've had a lot of conversations with Amon over a lot of these things in the past couple of months, and I haven't really talked to this group about some of these conversations because they were kind of picking information here and there, not really focused on one thing. So while we've had these conversations, I never really put it in one specific place. So regulatory restrictions was a big topic for me, especially in the cannabis industry. And now recently, looking at XRP and the ISO 222 coins, there's different types of regulatory restrictions in every type of industry. Okay, so when you're putting together a MFO, multiple family office, you need to consider all of these regulations. Okay, and each one is going to have very distinct legal structures. Okay. And if you don't have a professional family management company, then your family office runs a serious risk of fallout from negative publicity. Because if you get caught in legal action, not only is it expensive and harmful, it's also harmful to your reputation. You'd lose your reputation in some industries, you can't get it back no matter what you do. So that's a big determinant in the kind of help you're going to need for regulatory issues, infrastructure, and technology. So, one of the things that I learned real quick is that you have to have offsite protection of your technology, offsite storage. And if you employ this kind of technology by an external provider, then that, I don't want to say all the time, but I don't know anybody that has that kind of technology expertise that they could actually help you with a family, multiple family office, because technology infrastructure is going to be vibrantly different for every family based on the money that you're working with, based on the number of family members that you're working with the age of different family members. All those things are going to come into play. And when you buy in on these services, that may be more of a priority because financial operations become more complex, and they become more complex due to infrastructure and technology. So you want to get, I will not, I will not, I'll have somebody out, sorry, I'll have somebody outside my family office management work with us, because unless I get to the point where we have enough need for it, that'll be outsourced, because it's fairly complex and it requires specific excellence in that area, complexity. So if your family assets, your multiple family assets are substantial, meaning you got big dollars in it, and complex, meaning it's got all kinds of branches, then your multiple family office is going to have to hire more staff. It's just the way it is. And with more staff comes more costs or more outsourced services. Okay. So when you're in the position of hiring or looking at hiring more staff for a multiple family office, you need to bring all those families together and have an in-house decision on the matters that you're gonna have outsourced due to complexity. And so, because of this, in-house decisions on all matters must be final, because when you take it to the external staff, if you don't have guidance from the external staff is going to be a mess. Internal staff have to maintain the ultimate overview and decision-making process. So when you're working with multiple family wealth management, you have to make sure that the people that are representing each family is the best each family has. And you don't want to have multiple people. So each multiple family structure, multiple family wealth management is going to have one person. And when they come together, when the families come together to make a decision to hire somebody, to fire somebody, anything that has to do with in-house decisions, all of the multiple families must come together, because the families themselves maintain the ultimate overview on the decision-making process. If you let that go out of your hands, you've lost control of your multiple family wealth management. So you can't let that out of your hands. You've got to be in total control of the decision-making process as the families themselves. Data confidentiality. I work with patents, okay? And I am a maniac about confidentiality with patents, because this is truly a case where loose lips sink ships. So when I'm working with multiple family wealth management, I make sure that everyone in my MFO, I can trust them literally with my life. Because my patents are my life. I don't make any money unless my patents are secure, secure, secure. So when confidentiality is a prerequisite, then data confidentiality is a service that priority should be brought in-house. Non-critical systems, non-critical infrastructure, they can be outsourced. But anything that is confident, data confidentiality, that is not outsourced. That is kept in-source to protect the MFOs, okay? You do not want any kind of data outside of your MFO, because if it's outside, it's unsecure and it can be taken. So you don't want that. So those are going to be your key determinants of what things you're going to put outside of your family, your MFO, and versus what you're going to keep. Those are the kind of be the good deciding factors when you start throwing this out and trying to make decisions is, what do I keep in-house? What do I keep outside? Now, $64 question is, what do I outsource? Do I outsource or not? And the most worst part about this is the answer is, well, most of the time, the answer is, it depends. And you don't want to hear that. When you're putting this stuff together, you want to have A plus B equals C. Boom, bada boom, bada boom. It don't work like that. Because every MFO is going to run by a different train of thought, okay? And so before you do this, like I said in the first one, you want one family to start the MFO and hire the first branch of your infrastructure to build everything out. So if you're the one that's going to take the reins on that, the first person that you hire is someone to start running your MFO is going to be the most key person that you hire. So if you want to do this, but you don't know any key hires, then some of the people that are going to point you to the right direction are going to be your wealth management team from your bank. They often have people they can refer you to. Mine, I don't trust banks. Who I'm going to is my mentor Tom has had the same wealth MFO company for, oh my God, 30 something years, and he's willing to give me that name so I can start my MFO with that company. And it's a Stanley Morgan company. And that's who I'm going to start my MFO with, because there's 35 years of trust there. And they took Tom through all the hell that was in 2008, 2006, and guided all of his companies and all his assets through the COVID thing. And Tom didn't lose any money. He's doing fine. So because of that strong, strong, strong path, that's where I'm going to swing to. So there are a lot of considerations, okay, when you're comparing existing in-house capacity to available outsource resources. Now, Tom's focus of his multiple family offices is different than mine. The type of expertise that I'm going to need in mine is different than he used. The base is the connection. So this is the reason why I'm going with that, is because there's a base connection with available outsource resources that can work in his set and my set. And then the ones that we don't have filled for, places filled for, we'll be able to find that with working as a group. But I'm not too worried about that. The most important part is building the infrastructure of your MFO before you go forward, okay? And making the important decisions of what you're going to do in-house, what you're going to outsource, and what you're going to put in your MFO. So there's a, you got to compare cost, okay? You got to compare the quality of the services you're being provided. You got to compare the timeliness of the services. You know, when you're calling companies now and you call them, say, hey, I'd like to talk to you about whatever, and they don't call you back for 2, 3 days, expect the same type of treatment when you're paying them, because how they'll show you exactly how they are. So when they show you, believe them. Don't think, oh, this is going to change later, because it sure will not. So there's other things too. Confidentially, of course, but the biggest one of the other big things is, where will your data stay? Where will it live? Will it live within your company? Will it live in your personal residence? Where will it reside? Okay. Is data going to be split between your MFO and your in-house? A lot of that depends on the skill of your in-house. So you may have an MFO with 2 or 3 other people, and like, for instance, with data, okay, with digital currencies, okay. My digital currency data is not is going to reside with me. I'm going to have control of it, ultimate decision of it. But the majority will reside in my MFO. Why? Because if I connect with the people I'm trying to connect with, I'm not going to be making any decisions with that, because that's not my expertise. My MFO will be told, hey, look, this person in my organization is the expert. So whatever they buy and sell, run mine the same percentages, because they're the expert. Likewise, if I'm running a cannabis company, say I'm running a cannabis factory where we make, well, here I got one. Danny and Lance and I and the 12 admins of the last group, we were planning on doing a water project worldwide and a grow project worldwide, and a way to harvest food. So all of those different programs that we were putting together, that's my expertise. So I was planning on putting out documents once a month to my MFO, so that all of the other families that I was working with, all the that were involved in my MFO, they would have access to the same information and be propelled the same as the same speed as I was propelling myself. So it with my data would be with me, because I own all the patents. Everybody else, their data for the cannabis or that would reside in the MFO. So you have to consider these different options based on the skill set of your team, okay? One another thing you want to know is, what's their availability of consultation? Okay. Now, you know, we think in America we're kind of jaded, because we think like Yanks, okay? We don't consider the world. But wake up, people, because we're all about to go global, okay? And I worked most of last year in Australian time, because I was helping a gal put together a strip club in Adelaide. And she didn't know anything to do with it. And this was a family business that she had inherited. And she was losing money faster than you could say, you know, whistling in the dark. And so I helped change a lot of her business, and give her information, put her in contact with people that could actually help her with that business. But the availability of the consultation, I mean, I met them in the middle of the night doing this work, and then struggling in the daytime. Well, I'm planning on being in the South Pacific setting up hemp farms, okay? And setting up hemp businesses. Well, my granddaughter, when I ever get to talk to her, She's in Colorado, so the time differences is really a mess. So what's their availability consultation? And when you first start looking at an MFO, people overlook consultation hours because that becomes super critical, especially if you have an emergency situation. Okay, you've got data down, you've got a data breach, you've got a problem. So you're in Australia. Ooh, data breach, data breach, data breach. And hello, 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 get them on, get it, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. You know, like what's that? Mervins, wake up, wake up, wake up. They're not awake. It's not business hours. So you're looking for somebody who's a 24-hour availability consultation. I'm going to tell you this right now, that is not up for consideration. If you're comparing apples to apples and you have one organization that is saying, hey, our availability of consultation is 24/7, and the other one is saying, oh, 12/12, no. You're going to do the 24/7 because I guarantee you, because we are about to work in the global atmosphere, we will be global. It doesn't take long for you to switch from national to global thinking. So start from the get, start from day one. Start training yourself to think in global time. Now, one of my channel members, I can't remember who, is trying to teach me how to talk in military time so I can actually figure out the global hours. I'm hopelessly horrible at it, but God bless America, I'm giving it my best college try every time. Messing it up a lot, but it'll take me time, but I will get there because you are international, okay? So you have to think on an international time zone. The other thing you need to also consider is geographical differences, okay? What do I mean by geographical differences? If you are in the mountains of Colorado, and you have your company in the mountains of Colorado, you're gonna have issues with connection. Okay? So consider where you're basing your base of operations at. Okay? Like I would love to have my base in Australia, but in the past 2 nights, I've been digging, 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 digging through different sectors of Australia. Connection, data requirements, all kinds of stuff. How do I hook up everything? So the place where I wanted to live, the place where I wanted to move my industry, that's out the window because it's not going to work because it can't meet the geographical differences do not work for what I'm trying to do. So not just for your multiple family offices, but also for your business as a whole, the consideration of the geographic area that you're staying in is really important. Cultural differences. I love America. Just want you to know I love America. I truly love America, but there's some times I swear to God I could beat some Americans right in the nose because as a culture, we are ignorant of other people's cultures, and it is shocking. If you're an American and you're awake and you go to other countries and just sit back in a cafe and listen to the other Yanks, and pretty soon you'll start telling everybody you're Canadian. You think I'm kidding? I'm not, because, oh my God, if there's a bunch of people sitting at a table laughing and having a great sound and their big hubbub of sound, I guarantee you it's an American. Guarantee you. We are loud. We have zero cultural sensitivities. As a global citizen, you have to wake up to your cultural sensitivities, and you may need to hire someone in your multiple family organization just to teach your people about the cultural sensitivities in the areas that you're going to. Now, this has nothing to do with racism. This has nothing to do with, oh, we have to be different because we're this or that. It means that everybody's culture needs to be celebrated. There's not one better than the other. Well, okay, I'm lying. I'm going to say American culture is better, but I also know our foibles, okay? I love America. But if you go into a different country and you are trying to bring certain things to that country and you are offending those people, you're not going to get anywhere. Okay. So you might need to have your first year somebody in your MFU to advise you of cultural sensitivities of the countries you're going to. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I swear it's not. It's actually a really important thing with international business. So, just as examples, what I'm going to do in this next part of this is just examples, okay? Whether or not to meet an unmet need, which these examples are stuff that comes up all the time, or do you look to outsource resources to fill that role? And so this next part that I'm going to present is what I did. Okay. This doesn't mean it's the right way. It doesn't mean it's the wrong way, but I'm going to talk you through what I did and what I was planning. And by hearing the decisions to make and where the split was is, you may not make the same decisions, and that's totally fine. But if you don't know where the path is, you can't make the first decision. So my goal is to show you the path, okay? And then give you information that it makes your steps easier, okay? So when you start, okay, everybody says, how do I start, Parker? What do I pick? Should we have in-house staff do the asset allocation and do selection of what we're going to invest in? Do I hire somebody to do it? If the objective is of the family office to build an investment business, does that extend to offering services for a fee to third-party clients? And you can, because if you have that kind of expertise in your family office, you might want to offer your skill set outside of your MFO. But these are decisions you have to make before you hire anybody, okay? Once you figure out how you're going to set it up, if you're going to have outside services, third-party clients, or you're going to be only within your own selves, that's something you need to figure out before. That's step one, okay? How are you setting up your MFO? What are you comfortable with? Or you might have a single family office. You might decide, to hell with that, Parker. I don't trust nobody. I don't want to talk to nobody. I'm going to do it myself, or I'm going to hire in-house. Either way, you have to decide what you're going to be, an MFO, a single family office, or a virtual family office. First decision, which one? Okay. Once you get that decision, then the next decision is, do you build in-house capacity or do you outsource? And if you outsource, the decisions to outsource must be determined by the overall business plan of what you're going to do for the investment part of your business. Okay. On the other hand, if your family office is there, if your goals for a family office is to just put together a simple, lean, strategic portfolio that will not become core to your operating businesses, that's a whole different decision. Okay. So, how do you get to that decision? There's like five key points. Well, four key points, and then a bunch of external factors. Okay. So, one of the most obvious consideration is time, cost, quality. Okay. Now, it's time, cost, quality. Okay. Everybody knows that. Okay. But let's peel back the onion, okay? I want to emphasize that family offices are intended to be for significant wealth. And significant wealth implies multi-generation time horizons, okay? Too many times I've seen guys make stupid amount of money in the cannabis industry, and their short-term goals short-term cost considerations are far more influential. They determine where they're going to decide what is what. Those short-term cost goals are, they put more value on that than your long-term goals. Don't do that, okay? Do not do that, because the cheapest upfront costs do not translate into longer term loss, okay? It could happen, yes, but generally, no, it does not. Cost is the function, not just of the upfront fee, but also in the total cost that is seen in future years, okay? I'm gonna hire Tom Gardner. I know what his upfront cost is. He's stupid expensive, okay? I know that. But I also know that his cost is negligible, because I have seen what he's done in the past 30 years. I believe I know that his cost is going to offset the outcomes of profitability in long-term planning, okay? What he can set up in my organization is going to benefit me not just for the first 2 or 3 years, but 20 or 30 years. I've seen what he's done with his own multiple family office, and I'm planning on patterning what he did in my own office. I've seen it. It's very extremely successful, and I'm all about win, baby. So when you look at time, cost, quality, okay, remember that your upfront cost, your upfront investment to either build in-house. Now, that means, now, when I'm talking about upfront investment, this is not just whistling Dixie. This means like sending somebody to your in-house to college to learn how to do whatever you're needing them to do. That's an upfront investment. You can determine to do that in-house and long-term out-house, out of the house. I mean, you can, I said it backwards, dang it. I said it backwards. You can determine to put that out of the, outsource that, knowing that your upfront investment of paying for one of your kids to go to college, you want to need a CPA, and you're one of your kids like, hey, mom, I love math. Okay, you're in, okay? So the multiple family office, not you, but the MFO pays for college for in-house education. You've got somebody, an uncle that is, he's a lawyer, and the new law is the common law is going to be completely changed. Well, that guy is going to be, shit out of luck. He's going to be given an opportunity. Do you want to learn common law, or do you want to go to prison? That's what's going to happen to the lawyers, okay? So you may know that this Uncle Joe lawyer, he's a great person. He's not interested in hurting people. He's got, you know him. So you want to do an upfront investment to train him to be your in-house legal counsel. That doesn't come out of your budget. That's a function of a multiple family office, because the MFOs help you both in-house and into your multiple family office, okay? That's a decision that the families will make together, but that is an upfront investment that needs to be considered when you're putting this stuff together, okay? Because, that building in-house is going to be a higher, it's going to be more expensive. And another way that your time cost is going to be more expensive is hiring somebody with more experience who has a higher quality, okay? And those outsourced resources can often translate into a lower long-term total cost because of the savings that is expected from putting building this in-house capacity, okay? Let's get a sip here. So value of the function. It is not uncommon to see family offices give low value tasks to high paid staff. That's not uncommon. The problem is, the reason why this happens is because family offices are end up being very dynamic, okay? And sometimes the interpersonal relationships within the family get in the way of the professional processes, okay? And this gets to be more so when there's a very strong family principal, head of the family. And worse, when you have multiple family offices and all of the family principals are strong-headed. Oh, that gets fireworks. The thing is that when you do this, you need to line out one thing, is we are all working for the same goal, and that goal is to make us all successful. You can work with a group of extremely strong principals and fly. The difference is, when you start together, there has to be a relationship of extreme trust and social closeness between the family principals, all the senior staff, and they have to work together. Now, what happens sometimes that can tear apart a multiple family office is when family principals, head of the families, begin calling on senior staff to do this the bad girl way, take care of personal favors. Do not get into the habit of this, okay? This may not be, number one, the best use, and certainly not the most economically efficient use of that high-paying person's time, okay? And when you apply the cost-benefit analysis to a family office, it doesn't always work. So you might have your family, your multiple family office might have a let's use the example of a lawyer, okay? You have a common law lawyer, okay? And you need a trust done, okay? A first-year law student can do a trust, okay? But oh, this is my, I got my lawyer. I'm going to call my lawyer. What you've done is you've given a low-value task to a high-paid staff, and there's no need to do it because the return of value, the cost value that you're getting is not worth what you're paying this high-powered person for. And what ends up happening is, the family principals, they're all calling, hey, can you help me? Can you help me? Can you help me? It has nothing to do with the family business as a whole. It has to do with a personal favor of a single family. So, how do you stop that? And how do you determine if what the cost benefit is to an office family that does not always work? Okay. Those things are going to come up. So, when this happens, and it will happen, it's just, you can put your head in the sand and pretend it won't happen. But God bless America, I've been guilty of it too. I've had high paying staff and I ask them for personal favors because, it's my money. I'm paying you. I need to do what I want you to do. But it's really stupid because I could have hired somebody at a much lower price, that is not on the payroll, because they're on staff. They're on wages. They're on salary. They're not on time card. So it doesn't matter if they're doing high powered stuff for you or they're doing dirt stupid stuff for you. You still got to pay them the same wage. So that wage is your investment. Use your investment wisely. Okay. So how do you handle that? You have a trusted senior staff member. Okay. And that is the person who, what you're doing is you're proving reliability of your staff, and you take the problem to that staff member. That's your door, okay? And the staff member decides, oh, you know what? This is going to benefit the MFO, or it's only going to benefit one family. They'll be the one that decides where this information goes, okay? And who does it, okay? So that's a way to cement a relationship within the families to work together so that they're not requesting time out of staff that shouldn't be doing it. It should be for the multiple family office, not just the benefit of all of the families, not just one. But on the same time, there is a great value in not outsourcing these kind of requests because it keeps all the information in family. But there is also a real problem that by having multiple senior staff be called on like this, you end up turning your staff into overpaid personal valets. And you don't want that. You want that staff to be used just for your MFO. And if you're going to have the same needs done on a personal basis, you do it in your own company and you leave the MFO alone. So that's a learning path that you're going to go down when you first start your MFO, because you don't really know where the lines are yet. And so by having open communication with all the families when you're first starting, it sort of sets up the construction and the structure of your MFO. So repetition of function. So a function is something that's done on an irregular basis, okay? But that function requires detailed or technical know-how, okay? Here's an example. This is an extreme example. You like to fly in airplanes and jump out of airplanes with backpacks, with what's that called? What's that? A parachute, okay? A function of a parachute is to keep you from dying. So you only pack that parachute every time you go on a flight to jump. So that is a function that is performed on an irregular basis, but that function requires extreme technical know-how, and it is better if you hire somebody to pack that parachute that knows exactly what they're doing rather than having your personal assistant do it, okay? This is a, you know, kind of outrageous example of it, but when you register your company in a foreign jurisdiction, there's going to be subsequent annual awards. There could be administration submissions that you have to put in for that company for international. And while you may think you know what you're doing, those kind of, it's just like packing the parachute. Those kind of things, this annual renewals, all the kind of things that have to do with setting up an international outside of your country in a foreign jurisdiction, that is a prime example of what would be better performed by contracting and contacting a specialist rather than doing it in-house, because that requires special skill, just like packing a parachute. So depending on how complex getting this information to the new country is or along that lines, and the importance of the consequences of failure, you might want to have your existing staff learning from the outsourced resources how to take over this annual function. It may be something your staff can learn, but you've got to hire outsource for 2-3 years because it's so intermittent that you might have to hire a staff for a couple of years before you can take it on as yourself. Don't take it on right from the beginning because you may shoot yourself in the foot. Now here's an example of, for other people this might not be extreme, but for me this is extremely extreme. I have to have ongoing journal entries to an accounting system to determine where I'm spending all my money as I'm building this. And because I'm building in multiple countries all at the same time. And I got the grace of a gnat to remember where all that's going to. So when I do a time cost quality evaluation of this function, there's no way it's going to be done outsourced. They have to be close to me. So this is going to have to be performed in by in-house staff that works directly with me until they can see what I'm doing and take over that task. Because I'm going to be training them in-house, they're going to be trained to my standards, to my way of doing things, culture of my family office. How about that? Let's use that word, culture of my family office. I'm going to train the person who's going to do ongoing journal entries in my accounting system because of my weirdness with numbers and everything. They have to be able to speak Parker, okay? And it's not normal. So because it falls outside the norms of what people expect to do in ongoing journal entries, I need them available for me at the time I need them, and this is not outsourced. This is somebody that I have in-house. So even though it's a repetition of function, the issues around the function require it either be in-house or out of house, just depending on your personal family issues. Something else you need to consider. And a lot of people, when they're first building their family offices, they do not take into consideration change. Okay. Here's the dirty little secret. Family offices are family businesses. End of story. Okay. You're going to have your humanitarian projects and other kind of things, but what creates long-term wealth and familial wealth, generational wealth, is if your family office is set up as a family business. Yes, you are going to be humanitarian. Yes, you are going to give away money. Yes, you are going to give away things. That's not a problem. But unless you find a way to regenerate wealth, you're only going to do it one time. Okay? So this is the going to go on your back burner of putting this together. This is a business, make no mistake. It's going to be humanitarian, all the right things, but it absolutely is a business, and you have to maintain that little thought like, yeah, we're doing humanitarian stuff, but if we don't make money somehow, we're not going to be able to continue this. So there's a few family offices, when they start, they are small businesses, and they usually have very close relationships between the family members and the employees. The lines get really blurred, okay? And there's probably going to be, in the future, there'll be a change in your function, but there's also going to be a ch needed to be a change in resources. So what does this mean? So when you have in-house members of your staff, that means you're going to either rewrite their jobs when they leave, or you're going to have to cut their jobs. So the best way to deal with those jobs that you hire a gal to work to do your journal entries, okay? And she's 24 years old, newly married. 24 years old, newly married, at some time, babies are going to come, okay? And when that happens, she may not be able to work the crazy hours you need. So at that time, change is going to happen. So you're going to have to rewrite the job description to fit her needs and your needs, or you're going to have to cut her job. So when you're considering the people you're hiring, Also consider when you're going to contract with the most appropriate outsourced resource that allows you the flexibility to change without having to reassign staff or dismiss them. Okay? So when you hire people, look for people that have multiple skills so that you don't have to get rid of them. That's so critical. One of the most expensive costs of a family office is training the new staff. Okay? You can build incredible partnerships with outsourced resources, and they can be terminated or not renewed, and as required or when required, without feeling a moral or ethical consideration to be made for close employee relationships within a small family business. So if you're going to have somebody that you know is going to, you want that person to work with you for years and years and years, consider change. How will this affect change? I'm going to hire Lucy Liu. She's going to be my personal assistant. Lucy Liu is 25 years old. She's newly married. I know kids are going to happen. Okay, what can she do to stay with me as my personal assistant? Okay, well, it takes 9 months to have a kid and they're newly married. So maybe she won't have any kids for maybe a year. So I may have her for 2 years. What is her skill that she can do for me, and I can maintain her hiring when she has a kid? If you don't have an answer for that, Lucy Liu's not the person you need to hire. Okay? Outsource it. Because when you outsource it, you don't care. That's not your issue. When they have them in-house, you want a close employer-employee relationship within a small family business, because those people are the people that are going to, you personally are going to depend on. They depend on you for a paycheck, but you depend on them for their advice to continue your generational wealth. So you got to take into consideration those kind of aspects when you're hiring somebody. So I find out that Lucy Liu is she's a personal secretary, but she also has an interest in putting together events, major events. Okay, I'm going to have a cannabis event once a year. The crew that I need for a cannabis event, they can basically run the entire, put it all together in their homes. They don't even have to come to an office. Just send me a report once a month and we're good. Because me, I have a whole list of tasks for every single month a year before the event. So I can give that to them, get monthly reports, and good. So now I figured out a backup position for her if she has a kid and then comes to me, I can't work here these kind of hours because I've got a child. Okay, would you like to run this and have a backup consideration job for her? So it's really critical that all of the people that you have in-house, you have a very close, that you keep around you, you want a close relationship with them, and you want to make sure that you don't ever have to fire them. You want them, okay? So think about those different things when you're hiring people that you believe you're going to have long term. Okay, so there are other considerations, okay? And those considerations are external factors. They have nothing to do with you. So when you're thinking about in-house or outsourcing decisions, not all of those can be made by a cost-benefit analysis because there's other things, other factors that come into consideration. Okay, what about privacy and personal security? I used to, because I'm such a freaking workaholic, I would tell my private secretary I can't believe I did this. I had a safe welded into the back seat of her car. I paid for her car. I paid for the safe. I paid for the welder to put it in. You're like, what in the hell is wrong with you, Parker? The reason why I did that is I'm a total freaking type A personality. I cannot, if I have an idea, well, that's what happened last night. In the middle of the night, I'm like, I'm just gonna write all this out and then I'm gonna do a recording of this and it'll be all good. I'll do it tomorrow. I get it all written out. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Do I put it away? Oh, hell no. No, I immediately began recording. Okay. So I had all this so that at the end of the day, when she left, I put all of my documents into that safe and sent her away because I knew if I didn't do that, I'd work all weekend long. I'd never have time off. I'd never quit. So I know that's extreme, but it is what it is. Okay. So privacy, personal security, those are factors that are going to be taken into consideration when you determine whether to outsource things like travel, or if you have an in-house personal assistant to take care of them, those issues. You may have on-call availability that you need for different things that may becomes something that you're going to take in consideration. And what am I talking about? That always falls in IT, on-call availability. Your IT, you have to have 24/7. Okay. And what about domestic staff functions? Say you need on-call availability for domestic staff. Why? Why would you have to do that? Simple. Because you don't know when opportunity or business is going to come at your door. And if you don't have somebody to on-call, you don't have a way to set everything up immediate. So I have on-call for all my domestic staff functions. I have basically an entire second domestic staff that I pay all the time, whether or not I use them. Because if I need them, they're there. I don't need them, they're great. They can go do whatever they do. They make money, but I'm first. I pay them to be first. So when I need you, I need you. I pay you a wage, you show up. Okay. Do I pay you the same amount of wage that I pay the full-time in staff? No, I don't. I pay you half wages, which is, and those kind of people are usually women with children. Or people that cannot work a full-time job all the time. They can work a full-time job. They can have the kids go to grandma for a week while they help you with your disaster or with your needs for domestic staff. They have a solution part-time, but not a full-time solution. So I pay those kind of people half wages because with cannabis, they don't call. They just don't call. They just show up. So you never know what you're going to need. What you need to consider is this: is the best solution for you will ultimately depend on the objective of what you measure your outcome of. So ultimately, this your objective of what you measure your outcome, that is going to determine whether or not outsourcing is the best solution for you. You have to take in a lot of different considerations when you're considering these kind of objectives. And that just comes with talking to people, So, and I don't know if I want to break this, stop this now or go to, I think I'm going to stop this now. Because the next thing I want to talk about is staff costs, how to determine staff costs, and who to have as staff, and all different kinds of stuff like that. So that's numbers, and I need to have it written on blue paper before I start talking about this, because I've got it on black and white paper, and the numbers are just going to swim. So I need to change my papers before I go to the next part. So I hope you enjoyed this last class, and I have more to come. May you find the right path that you need, and may God open it up for you when you're ready to walk it. God bless you all. Amen.